It is so great to be here. I love this church. When I had cancer a couple of years ago, and I had to move to Dallas with Barbie for some time, and when we moved here, we thought, this is going to be our church home. And so we worshiped with you, and so I feel right at home. And when I was here, I got so much encouragement from you, so much love and good relationships here, and I never did get a chance to just come up here and just say, thank you. And so I wanted to thank you for being such a loving congregation. And perhaps some of you are here at Preston Road for the first time, being Easter. Maybe some of you are even looking for a church. And if that's the case, I think you came to the right place. If you're looking for hope and you're looking for healthy relationships, I just think that Preston Road is the place to be. And I wanted to say, Happy Easter! A few years ago, I was looking at my favorite theological journal, Sports Illustrated, and it had an article in it, and it was called World's Greatest Comebacks. And so I thought, well, that sounds interesting. And so I went to the article, and they even had a top 10 of World's Greatest Comebacks. One was Michael Jordan after he played Major League Baseball, and then he came back to the NBA, and they talked about his great comeback. Another was Muhammad Ali after he was stripped of his title, and then 7 years later, he defeats George Foreman in Zaire. And that, but as I'm looking through this whole top 10, I can't wait. I got to see what Sports Illustrated is going to pick as number one world's greatest comeback. And here it is. Jesus Christ, 33 AD, defies critics and stuns the Romans with his resurrection. And I thought, they got it right. I mean, this is Sports Illustrated, and they got it right. And I mean, it is. It is the world's greatest comeback, isn't it? It's why we're gathered here today. Because Jesus Christ, he was crucified. They put him in a grave. And then 3 days later, he is out of there. He is alive, never ever to die again. Indeed, that's the world's greatest comeback. And a lot of my ministry, as you know, and some of you have participated in, has been in Kenya. And many of us have gone together to the Ulinda slum in Kenya. And this is in right in the middle of Kisumu, Kenya. And we are told that the Ulinda slum in Kisumu, Kenya, is the most diseased place on the planet. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. It seems like they get it there. And so it's a great place to do ministry. But the first time I went there was no medical clinic there. And so I was thinking, how could you have the most diseased place on the planet and not have a medical clinic there? But that was the case. And so after I'd been at a church, preaching at a church for 30 years, and I left and I went to Amarillo to ultimately work with Christian Relief Fund, they decided that they'd give me a going-away present. And so for the going-away present, they gave me a clinic right in the middle of the Ulinda slum. And I know some of you helped with that clinic, and so I thank you so much for doing that. And so after we got the clinic built, I thought it would be really great if we put some kind of sign over the front door so that everybody that walked into the clinic would have something to think about. And so I decided that we should put a biblical verse. And instead of me picking it out, I went to the patients and I said, you need to pick out a biblical verse that you think ought to be right above the door so that everybody that walks in this AIDS clinic, that they will have something to remember. And so they came back and they said, well, we picked out a verse. And I said, what'd you pick out? And they said, we picked out Proverbs 23:18. And I said, man, I can't even remember what that says, Proverbs 23:18. And so I looked it up, and here it is, Proverbs 23:18. Surely there is a future, and your hope will not be cut off. Now, I don't think that's the one I would have picked out at first. If you had AIDS, is that what you want to remember most of all? That I've got a future, I've got a great hope. Because you think that most people, when they have AIDS, they're going to be really sad, not want to remember that there's a future and there's a hope. But see, hope, Jim was talking a little bit about it in his communion meditation. Hope means that you have a joyful anticipation of the future. It's one of our big three in Christianity: faith, hope, love. It means that when I look forward, I'm happy about what I see in the future. That's hope. Now, hope happens when you believe that your power is greater than your problem. If you believe that your problems are greater than your power, then you don't have any hope. But once you believe that your power to deal with your problems is greater than your problems, you start having hope. Now, at this clinic they built for me, every time I go there, they always ask me if I will teach a class. And the class is called How to Die. And you'd think that not many people would want to go to that one, but there's a lot of people that want to go to it. And everybody that goes to that class, they have full-blown AIDS. And so I teach them a lot of things out of the Bible, and I teach them a lot of things about death, but I always end the class in the same way. I have two sentences that I always give them, and it's how I end the class. And these are the two sentences. Number one, there is no cure for AIDS. Number two, there is a cure for death. And isn't that true? And isn't that why we're gathered here? Because we believe. Look at these women that are gathered here. These are all people who had attended class, and they just begged me, would you take a picture with me? And so I have all these women that are gathered here, and they just walked out of the class, How to Die. And they're smiling. And I'm wondering, why are they smiling? And the reason I know they're smiling is because they really believe that. They really believe that there is a cure for death. And therefore, they have hope. They're smiling about it. Because of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, there's a cure for death. There's a cure for the greatest problem that we are ever going to face. There's a cure for it. Now, when Barbie and I had been at the Northwest Church of Christ, where we ministered for 30 years, they decided after 20 years that they were going to give us a vacation. And we were pretty excited about getting this vacation. And they wanted us to take a vacation to Hawaii. And so we decided that we'd love to go to Hawaii. And so they gave us the check. And it was kind of exciting, but not as exciting as we had hoped it would be. Because we really thought they were going to give us enough money to take our two boys with us. And they gave us enough money for Barbie and I to go. And so we thought, well, we don't want to leave the boys back at home for this great vacation to Hawaii. And so I started doing some research. And after researching trips to Hawaii, I found out that there was one trip you could make to Hawaii, and it cost half as much as all the other trips. If you went to this one particular island, it was cost half as much, and we'd been given enough money to go to that island, and Barbie and I could go, and our two boys, Patrick and Jeremy, could go with us. And besides that, on that island, they had free golf. And so I thought, well, this sounds pretty good. So anyhow, we headed off to the island of Molokai. Now, when we first picked it, we didn't know that much about Molokai. We just knew that it was cheaper than any other place. But if you know anything about Molokai, there's one thing Molokai is known for: leprosy. It is the island where, for nearly its whole history, has been the place where lepers are taken when they have leprosy. It was a place of isolation. It was the death sentence if you went to Molokai. And if you went to Molokai, it meant this: you're never coming back. Because once they sent you there, you just never came back. And as you can see in this picture, the steepest sea cliffs in all of the world are on Molokai. And you get to the bottom of those sea cliffs, and there's a little landing there. And on that little landing, they had a leper colony. And the lepers were dropped off there, and surrounding this area, this landing, are huge waves that come in from the ocean, and there's jagged rocks. And so once you're there, there's just no direction you can go to get off of that island. And that's where they would send lepers. And it was a place of isolation where you could never leave. Now, isolation's pretty much the way that leprosy's been dealt with in the whole history of the world. It started back with Moses. And Moses said in Leviticus 13, he says this: as for the leper who has the infection, his clothes shall be torn, and the hair of his head shall be uncovered. And he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean all the days during which he has the infection. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. And pretty much everyone in history followed Moses' example. Moses said if someone has leprosy, he should be isolated. And so pretty much everybody followed that example, and anytime anybody had leprosy, they isolated that person. Well, leprosy really didn't have a way to be treated until the last century. And before that time, nobody knew what to do with a leper, and so they just sent them away and isolated them. There's a couple of times, however, in the Bible, it was different. Like one time, there's this prophet in the Old Testament. His name is Elisha. And Elisha encounters this guy named Naaman. And Naaman has leprosy, and Elisha tells him to go to the Jordan River and dip 7 times. And Naaman says, nah, there's a lot better rivers than that. The Abana, the Pharpar, I should go there. And no, Elisha says, nah, unless you go to the Jordan River and dip 7 times, you're not going to get rid of your leprosy. And so Naaman finally goes to the Jordan River, dips 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and on the 7th time, he is clean. And there's one other encounter with leprosy that's even more famous and more spectacular than the one with Naaman, and that's the one that you find in Mark chapter 1. And here you got the whole problem and power situation again. You've got a man who has leprosy, and the problem of leprosy is that anytime somebody touches you, if he has leprosy, he will make you unclean. And here's the person who comes up to him, and it is Jesus himself. Now, is the power of leprosy going to be greater, or is the touch of Jesus and his power going to be great enough that he can make the leper clean? And so we read about it in Mark 1. It says, a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. I'm willing, he said, be clean. Immediately, the leprosy left him and he was cured. But in Hawaii, that wasn't the case. When you said Molokai, he never came back. Well, that's the main story of Molokai. And if there's a second story of Molokai, we found out it's this. It's the story of a Belgian priest. And this man was named Damien. And Damien heard about the horrible situation in Molokai, and so he asked the church, he says, is there any way I could go to Molokai and minister to the lepers who are there on the island? And they said, yes, you can go, but here's the stipulation. If you go, you can never come back. They said, you'll have to stay there on that island with the lepers for the rest of your life. You can never return. And so Damien went to Molokai. He went down to where the lepers lived, and he found it to be so much worse than he ever thought it could be. There was no hospital. There were no doctors. The crime was horrible. There was prostitution. People were stealing everything. There was hardly any food. There was hardly any water to drink, and people would be dying there every single day. And Damien tried to help. He tried to create law and order for the leper colony. He brought music to the island. He brought flowers to the island. He would perform their amputations. He would bandage their wounds. He would build their coffins. He would dig their graves. And he would preach every Sunday a sermon to all the lepers. He did this for 17 years. And every time on Sunday morning, he would come up and he'd go to the pulpit, and he'd always start it out in the same way. He'd say, my brethren, and then he'd take off on a sermon with a biblical text. And then one Sunday morning, he came to the pulpit just like he did on every other Sunday morning, and he stood behind it, and he said, we lepers, and then he took off. Because Damien had leprosy. And Damien would shortly die of that leprosy. So, we're on Molokai. And Barbie, who's a great singer, if you know her, she decided that she wanted to go sing for the lepers. And we didn't know if there's any way you could get down to the leper colony. And so Barbie asked, and they told her that she could ride a mule down a switchback trail down those steep island cliffs. And so Barbie decided that she was going to do that. And so I thought, well, I'd like to go too. And they said, well, not with those two children you've got. They says, we can't let those children go down to a leper colony, so you'll have to stay here with your children. And so we stayed there, and I'm right here, Patrick's here, and Jeremy's here, and there's kind of one of these wooden rail fences right on the edge of the cliff. It's kind of scary. But we, Patrick, Jeremy, and I, we stood there and watched over the edge of the cliff, and we could see below the leper colony, and then we could see the beautiful Barbie Jones riding a mule down the steep switchback trail of the cliffs that lead to the leper colony. And so we watched her go down, and I thought I would use the moment to help teach my two boys, and so I told them the story of leprosy. And then I told them about a man whose name was Damien, and I said, he moved right down there where the lepers lived. And I told them all the things that Damien did for the lepers and all the sacrifices that he made. And then I told them that Damien died right down there of leprosy. Well, then my youngest son, Jeremy, he turned to me and he said, why? He said, why would he do that? Why, when he didn't have to go down there, why would he go down there? And why would he do all those things for all those people who are lepers? Why would a man do something like that, even to the point of giving his life and dying for all those lepers? He said, why would he do that? I so much wanted to have a good answer, you know? And so I was leaning on that fence, and I looked right down the railing, about 8 feet further from where we were standing. I noticed that there was a little piece of paper about that big. And that piece of paper was nailed into the post. And I thought, what's on the paper? So I walked down, bent over, and I looked at the piece of paper. And there were three words on the paper. Because of Easter. And there was my answer for Jeremy, right? Why would a man go all the way down to this place? Why would a man serve lepers? Why would he serve them to the point of death? It's because of Easter, isn't it? Because Damien knew that this isn't the end. Damien knew that there is another life. Damien knew in the physical resurrection of Jesus Christ. And can you imagine how those lepers felt and what they were thinking when on Sunday morning Damien would come up there and preach a sermon, and he would start it off and he'd say, we lepers. And then he'd take off on 1 Corinthians 15 and think what this verse would have meant to someone who had leprosy on Molokai. For Paul writes, so will it be with the resurrection of the dead. The body that is sown perishable, it is raised imperishable. It is sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. You see, Damien believed that this, what you see here on Molokai, what you see on this earth, it's not the end. The resurrection shows us that there is a cure for death. And you got to think about that, don't you? You see, when I came here to Preston Road a couple years ago, I had cancer. And you encouraged me so much. I don't think any group of people could encourage me so much as people from this congregation. And I appreciate all that encouragement. But even with all the encouragement, don't you in the back of your mind think, I still got cancer? Don't you start thinking that things as they affect you, I could die of this. And how do you live when you're facing death? How do you keep living when you know that there is death? When you've got this problem of death, this great problem of death, you keep living when you know that there is a power that is greater than your problem, and you know there's a cure for death. This body, it isn't it. I'll be given a new one. And so what I'm recommending is maybe you just need to put a sign right above your door. You don't have to, but maybe you should imagine putting a sign right above your door. And that sign, maybe it should say Proverbs 23:18. Surely there is a future, and your hope will not be cut off. We can have hope. There is a cure for death because of Easter. Lord, thank you so much for the reality of the resurrection. Thank you so much for giving us a cure for death because of Easter. And we pray in the name of the resurrected one, Jesus. Amen.